Welcome to the Tourism in Malaysia podcast, where we explore the latest trends and developments in inbound tourism industry in Malaysia. Each episode will bring you interviews with industry experts, destination profiles, and tips and strategies for success in inbound travel trade. Whether you're a seasoned travel professional or just starting out in the industry, we've got something for everyone. So sit back, relax, and join us as we take you on a journey through the exciting world of inbound tourism. Here's your host, Uzadi Udanas, award-winning tourism activist and expert in inbound tourism industry.
Let's dive in today's episode with Uzadi.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Tourism in Malaysia. Guys, recently I had a great conversation with Rohit Talha during his visit in Malaysia. Well, for those who doesn't know who is Rohit Talha, he's a global futurist, award-winning keynote speaker, and the CEO of Fast Future. So our conversation is evolved to the topic of the tourism industry in Malaysia and how our industry players can move forward to compete effectively in global market. So let's listen to our conversations.
I think that conversation that says, can we change things? New government, can we have a new approach? We know we're struggling to rebuild from where we were in 2019.
Yeah,
we've done a lot, but we've got a long way to go to get back to 26 million.
Yeah,
and we'd love to get to a lot more.
Yeah.
So the only way we can do that, we know you're not just going to keep giving us money. We know that. So can we develop a roadmap together? And not a one-year roadmap, but a five-year roadmap that says, okay, how do we want to build tourism in Malaysia over the next 5 years? Some targets that we want to get to, a number of people, revenues, and then you can start to say, well, okay, what do we need to do to get to that roadmap? And there's a few things. We need to research the markets. So we think that India might be an important market. We think that the Middle East might be an important market. We know that there are some issues around perception in Europe and the US. So the only way we can deal with that, we can either guess and put money down on advertising, which is what Saudi have done, right? Mm-hmm. No one wants to go to Saudi for tourism in the UK. I can guarantee that. There's like 10 people who might go. But we're spending, the Saudis are spending something like $1 million per person to get them there.
Wow.
Right. But they don't seem to have done the research in the UK market to say, why would you come to Saudi? Why wouldn't you come to Saudi? As the, you know, the person bringing everyone. Yeah. And so you need the research in your key markets. You need to decide. And that may be something you do together, but we need some research in those markets and we need clever ways of doing that research. So let's forget the money. Let's agree that over those 5 years, we're going to research different markets to understand the dynamics. Or can we find ways of stealing other people's research? Right? That we don't need to understand the characteristics of the outbound traveler from India or China. They're the same, whether they're coming to Malaysia or they're coming to Thailand or Singapore. The same characteristics about this is their age profile, this is their income profile, family size. So that information we should be able to get quite easily. We could put some students on, give them ChatGPT, and they'll find you quite a lot. The specific attitudes towards Malaysia, that's where we need to do the research. So if you have a roadmap, then you can start to say, well, okay, what can we do? How do we do this? And that means that the individual associations need their roadmaps. That means the businesses need to think about 5 years. That means the technology providers, so that you're all looking in roughly the same direction. And it's not going to be easy. It's not like you all walk in the room, you come out, you have a big celebration party because after the first meeting, everyone's agreed. It might take you 10 meetings even to agree that you need a roadmap. But to keep talking, keep working towards it and to have the conversation about the positive first. So what do we want? Where do we want them coming from? How do we make sure that they're spending time in KL, but also that we're getting them out to these different places like Labuan, the different parts of the country, so that we're also spreading the benefits. And then that leads you into conversations about, well, okay, what are the enablers? And from the government side, obviously, there's regulation to make it much... You may not make it simpler overall, but you might make it more convenient so that I don't have to go to 10 places to get my license. I can go to one place. I might still have to fill in exactly the same information on 10 forms, but I can go to one place that says, if you want to offer tourism services, you go to this one place. Now, that's where you might be able to come in and say, we'll give these different ministries their versions of the form, but we have one electronic interface where you fill in all the information, and then we'll print 10 forms to give to these other departments. But we'll make that simpler. But it has to be part of a bigger picture. It has to be part of that. And similarly with the infrastructure. There's no point saying to people, well, come, if we don't have the roads, with certain places don't have the transport facilities. There's no point saying go to this particular destination if you can't get anyone there. So government also needs to have that conversation. And then the tourism people in government have to talk to the infrastructure people. The tourism people around visas, it's nothing to do with tourism, I'm certain. Yeah. It's to do with homeland security, defence, all these other people. And to say to them, what's your worry? What is your concern here? And then to say, well, what is our goal? Our goal is to be the most efficient to get people here easiest. So the e-visa may be the option, but then how do we make sure that that e-visa proposition is really simple? So you don't have to go into the embassy. You can do it all electronically. And if you come from somewhere where we're more worried about you, you have a secondary process or you have more questions. So if I want to go to India, we fill in a form. If you tick the box that says, did your parents come from, or your grandparents come from a Pakistani-owned territory, then you go to another 20 pages of forms. You need letters from their grandparents' priests before you can come. Right? So when you go to the visa agency, they just say, tick no, because half of India comes from Pakistani-owned territory. So you have to get government thinking about that, and they're not going to win that battle in 1 year. It's going to take them 3, 4, 5 years. So if you know that, like, just agree, we're going to stop arguing about that. Right? We know, we told them, they've got it on their action plan. We can keep moaning, but it's like moaning about the sun. It's not going to stop shining tomorrow because it was too hot today. And then you can save your energy. You can focus on the things that will help you. So it's good for you to have that common roadmap. Now, that means you yourselves have to talk internally amongst yourselves to try and agree that. And I don't think you'll agree that in one go.
No.
But maybe one of the things to do is to get some of the younger people in the industry to come together with the senior people and bring some different processes. Just sitting in a room talking, I'm sure you come back and you think, well, is this 2022 or 2023? But weren't we having this conversation in 2001? How do you make sure that you're having the conversation in a different collaborative way? And I think the younger people might have more energy around doing it differently. And so the roadmap, I think, is the most important thing, that you've got one agenda that the government isn't trying to push an agenda around tourism that isn't backed by the tourism industry. And the tourism industry isn't trying to do something completely different. I think none of you have talked about sustainability, but I think that's a big piece of this now, is to demonstrate how you as an industry are going to move towards a more sustainable proposition, because that's becoming more of an issue for more and more countries, for outbound travellers, is how sustainable is your offering. So you have to start educating your community around that. And I think one of the things you do see in a lot of smaller destinations is government taking on a role of education of the suppliers, the small companies in particular, just how to manage your business, how to market your business. Simple things that they don't get. You're probably having to do a huge amount of education about, you know, what is the internet? Why should you use it? It's changing a bit, but you can't do all of that. That's where you need some government support that says, look, actually we have facilities all across the country for education. We need to develop some faculty, some teachers, but we also have people in the industry who can come and do some of that teaching. But we need a government program that's saying, if you're in a small business, we can help you. We can help develop your skills to run your business. Now, a lot of you don't need that. You've been running your businesses for a while. But how to run a small business in tourism, and that has two benefits. One is it gives them skills. But the other is the government starts to learn what the issues are for most small businesses. And so you build up an understanding, and gradually the pressure grows on them to change things. And then I think it's constantly reminding yourselves of this roadmap and where we're going. So there might be an issue like the pandemic, will it hit everyone? But that doesn't mean the roadmap is wrong, it just means the timescale gets extended. So it's constantly reminding ourselves that this is where we're going, and constantly trying to do the work to professionalize the industry. And all of the things I've talked about mainly is without any money. So you use the industry to do the education, you use the facilities in schools and college that are empty, but then the tourism ministry have to talk to the education ministry to make that happen. But most of this is very low cost. Or if you're talking to government, you're saying, look, this isn't just money spent on tourism, this is money spent on raising the skill base, the education base, we're professionalizing all of these people so that they can grow, they can create jobs, they can contribute to the economy. So it's an economic investment, not just a tourism investment. And then the research also helps determine where government might focus its marketing to some extent. And the government's marketing is always going to be a little bit blunt. It's a little bit slap it down, make a video, push that video out in three different places in China, four different cities in India, somewhere in Singapore, and you know, it's always going to be a little bit like that, you know that. But some of the things you can do are more creative, and that's where I think things like the metaverses can help. So these are big virtual Disneylands, basically. Anyone can go and buy land, anyone can create their property. So Seoul has done this. You can go and visit virtual Seoul. You can have a look around the city. And I think that's a really good thing to get government behind, to say, well, let's create this to promote either a virtual Malaysia, or maybe we start with two or three destinations. One big one, like Kuala Lumpur, one small one, but we link them together. And we use all this talent we have in the country, all of these developers, all these people, and then we can start to promote what we have. And then an individual tour guide can be in there taking you on a tour of something, or we can see the cooking lessons that you can do. We can see the yacht. I can go inside a yacht. We 3D model, scan it. We put one yacht in there. I can go and see the facilities. I can see the different villages and places. I can visit the beaches. In two or three years' time, I'll be able to taste the food. I'll be able to smell the waterfalls. That's coming very soon. But again, if you have government engaged and you say, look, this is our platform that we can keep adding to. We can keep promoting Malaysia digitally. Now, that does two things. One is it starts to encourage people. It captures their interest. It becomes a place where your young talent can exercise their creativity. So if they're learning these skills, it's a great way for them to showcase them. And it also allows some people to see Malaysia who might never come. 70, 80, 90% of the planet will never come to Malaysia. It's just the reality. We've got 8 billion people on the planet. Maybe a billion people out of those 8 billion will ever come here. That's 12.5%. Right. So what do we think about the others? Is there a way we can create some experiences that get them interested? Particularly if you're scared of coming. You're scared, you hear all this nonsense in the newspapers, you think that as you get to the airport, you know, the Islamic Guard is going to strip search you, you'll be handed a bulletproof vest and, you know, for security. You know, that's the kind of thing. I went to Iran just before Christmas, and that everyone outside was like, why are you going? Like, well, because they're nice people. And when you get here, like, it's completely different.
Yeah.
But maybe the way you introduce that is virtually. Because virtually is very safe. I can come, I can see. I can see that people are just the same. Yesterday I was in, was it the KICC shopping center?
KLCC
shopping center. It was a big show on for some...
Water fountain?
In the fountain. Well, there was this pop band, the boy band.
All right,
there.
Okay, all right.
I don't know what they're called, but there were 10,000 screaming school children there. So that's just... You'll see anywhere in the world. It's like showing that these are normal people, fascinating people, this is a place to come. So some of those people might then say, actually, I've seen it, I will go. Others might say, I won't, but I'll pay for some experience that I can have here. So that dining experience, in 2 or 3 years' time, I might be able to pay 10 ringgit to try that virtual dining experience. You can't do it all overnight, but you can start to think bigger, you can start to think long term, and then you think about, okay, what are the little steps that move us towards this? And I think you as associations have that opportunity to also work together to say, look, we can all argue individually, but we're never going to win. We can work together and gradually move towards something that's a bigger vision.
Rohit, just one question.
Sure.
So you were saying that you taste virtually. How do you do that? It doesn't make sense to taste food without really tasting it.
So you'll have some sort of attachment that will trigger your senses.
Yeah?
It might be like a sensor on the tongue,
yeah?
Or it might be something that bypasses your tongue and just stimulates your nervous system in the same way as the food on your tongue then triggers sensory information to your brain.
So
we'll
do
the same. We'll just bypass your tongue.
Yeah.
The same with smell. All these things end up as signals in your brain. And that's a lot of people are working on this because it's the next extension of virtual reality. And you've seen quite a lot of those things. So now you can touch things, can't you? In those digital suits, you can wear a suit. You can feel something. You can feel the vibration when you play a racing game in the car. So we're moving towards all of that. So that's coming.
And it costs more. It costs a lot of money.
Well, the price is coming down. And for you at this end, you're not going to be pioneers in the technology.
Yeah.
But when the technology is ready, then you can start to bring it in. And there might be some people here who are going to be developing this.
Okay.
Absolutely. You're the size of country where you will have technology developers originating this.
Yeah.
You're not too small.
Yeah.
And you only have to look across the water to see that... You know, Singapore, they're cutting edge on some of this stuff. So it's the same people.
Right.
The same talent is developing this. It's about ambition.
Yeah.
And so I think all of these things fit together. But where you have to start is by a joint conversation with government to say, let's build a long-term roadmap for tourism. And we're not going to have everyone together. We're not going to have everyone aligned at the beginning. But the goal... is to get to a place where we're all working towards the same objective. There'll always be arguments about how much should Kuala Lumpur get versus some other part of the country. But that's a small argument within the bigger picture. So that's where I would start. What else did I say? Attraction, retention, regulation, training. So I think one of the things that's very important is the quality of staff training. And how do you get people who are really high service standards in all of the facilities? So when someone comes on that 600 ringgit tour, they're still trained to deliver that experience. And what can we do? And that's partly education. That's partly a conversation with the bigger providers as well.
Mm-hmm.
To say to people like the big hotels or the big... companies, look, actually you have a little responsibility here to take on a few more people, and maybe government gives you that. Mm. You're training them. We know you don't need them, but we're training them so that they can then go out and work, and then they can train other people. You need that mechanism for increasing the number of trained people in society, because anyone coming in from anywhere now, they're not judging Malaysia by the standard of what was service like in Malaysia last year.
Mm.
They're judging you based on what was the service like in the last place I went to.
Mm.
So I might have gone to Dubai, I might have gone to Paris, I might have gone to Thailand. I'm judging you against my experience.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can have all your excuses for why, well, sorry, blah, blah, blah. They don't care, right? I'm paying you the money. If your experience isn't as good, the first thing I do is tell social media.
Yeah.
I tell Instagram, I tell Twitter, I tell YouTube, I tell, you know, TikTok. And that's another thing that I think you can start to do, which is encouraging every tourist to come to really start to use social media to tell their stories and to incentivize them in some way, whether it's just a cup of coffee in the hotel, to just say to the customer before they check out or at breakfast on their last day, don't do it at checkout, because checkout they just want to get out. But at breakfast, just, you know, the staff to say, oh, would you mind recording a 10 second video on TikTok or posting something while you're here about your experience, and just really encouraging people, building it into the natural way of working with customers, to, and giving them some reward for it, giving them some little reward. It doesn't have to be big. It can be a coffee, it can be sponsored at different times by different people, and therefore you're encouraging people to post. You're not telling them what to say, but you're just getting more and more content out there, and very quickly you can get that. Normally when you go to the theatre or you go to a concert, you're told to put your phone away.
Yeah,
but actually to say, no, if you're going to a performance of anything here, get your phone out.
Record it.
Send it out. Get it out there. Get this out there. And then it's also thinking about who are the influencers. So who are the big influencers in China, in India? You might hate them as individuals because there's some stupid 17-year-old who doesn't know anything, but they've got 20 million followers. I mean, I look at them and I want to shoot myself because I think, is this the future? Like, these people are horrible. But they're big influencers. They have a big audience. So if they say, I went to Kuala Lumpur, here's my diary, here's my TikTok videos of my trip, they're going to bring more people to you than any advertising campaign.
Yes.
And so it's also with the research is finding who are the lead influencers in each of these markets that we can start to approach. And then you've got to look at, well, how much do they want, right? How much money do they want? They don't just want a free flight, free hotels, and they want money.
They want money, yes.
So you have to think about, well, okay, what's our test? We start with two and we see what's the return on investment. And then that that then starts to play out. Now, there's also, I think, a very interesting opportunity around partnerships here. So one of the big things we want people to do is to spend money in the restaurants, in the leisure attractions, in the shopping centres. Now, they're constantly trying to get people in with discount promotions and buy one, get one free, 20% off, 50% off. So they're already discounting their product. So there's a way of saying to people, well, look, if you're coming, here's a package we can give you that's worth 2,000 ringgits, 3,000 ringgits. It's discounts here, it's discounts there. So it's not real money. Like, no one is giving you real money. They're just giving you discount that they would give anyway. But instead of me paying 600, well, the tours is different. But maybe the retailers, you know, they give, if you give the discount, or their contribution is a 20% discount and 5% of the value of the sale. and the 5% then pays for these smaller people, because if I'm a small tour guide or I'm a chef, or whatever, I can't afford to give you my thing for free. But that can be paid for by this common fund that's paid for effectively as a discount that they're giving. And then it's starting to pull these packages together and starting to say, okay, you can choose. You can choose the things you do from here, but you've got 2,000 ringgits if you're coming, or whatever it is. And more people start to play with that. And so the way I qualify for that is I have to go and spend a certain amount of time in the shopping centre, or I collect my tokens that I can get my discounts and that I can get my tickets. But basically, I can have my tours for free. I can have my classes for free. I can have one day on a yacht charter for free, or whatever it is. I can start to do that because it's paid for collectively with discounts and by people giving some money in return for someone coming to shop at their restaurant or at their hotel. So it's also starting to bring people together. And everyone will say, well, why should I give a discount? And you say, well, look in your window. You've got 50% off already.
Mm. Yes.
But if I'm sat in Delhi, I don't know that, right? I don't know you've got a 50% off sale. So if you tell me that I come and I'm going to get, you know, the free tour pass,
yeah,
if I spend a bit of time shopping, and I'm going to get the shopping cheaper,
yeah,
then I'm like, okay, this is interesting. You're starting to make these packages attractive for me.
Mm.
So it's that partnership piece again.
Mm.
But none of this can be fixed overnight. You can start with simple things like getting people to post their TikTok videos. Just asking. Going now to everyone in your association and just saying, look, ask your customers to post a TikTok video. They don't even need to know what a TikTok video is, right? You can show them one and say, this is what it is, here's how you capture it. You can make a 1 minute video teaching your members how to capture a TikTok video, and then they can tell their customers. But those are the kinds of things you can do straight away. And I think it's really important to show to your government that you're not waiting, that you're not waiting for government to act. You're saying, look, we know we need to do all of this. Here's what we're already doing. This is, you know, we're doing all we can. We find some developers to create a basic metaverse experience, but really we need to increase this. Look at what Seoul is spending. Seoul's spending $200 million on theirs. They've got all the tech companies to support it. You're not going to go there straight away, but part of your research, and again, getting students in some of the universities to research.
Mm.
What are other countries doing with metaverses, with social media? And again, a lot of this information is out there, but get them to bring that back in so you've got a story to tell government. And you're showing government that you're thinking about what it needs. And what it needs, if you're tourism minister, is either to get out of that job really quickly and get a better job, or to show that you're doing a really good job. Right, and to show that you're leading the way economically for the country. So instead of everyone leaving the room when it comes to who's going to be tourism minister, suddenly other people want to be tourism minister because it's a successful growth thing. It's showing that you're bringing revenue to the country, you're bringing tourists to the country, you're growing the country's brand reputation. So it's changing also what it feels like to be tourism minister for Malaysia. You have to stand in their shoes. You have to think about, it's like a negotiation. Let me give you an example. The two of you,
yeah,
right? I'm going to give you 1,000 ringgits and I'm going to give it to you.
A
and
pound, ringgit.
1,000 ringgit.
Okay.
And you have to now decide between you how you're going to split that 1,000 ringgits. You can't split it equally, and you can't end up with 0 ringgits. So just take 10 seconds, decide between you,
wow,
how are you going to split that 1,000 ringgit? Between the two of you, how are you going to split that?
You're the minister,
ringgit?
Deputy minister.
Well, you can be, yeah, you're just two people. You got, I'm giving you 1,000 ringgits, but you only get the money if you can agree how you're going to split it. Go ahead.
Split, yeah.
But you can't split.
You cannot do 50-50. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a portion where you be happy, I'll be happy.
So I will give my technology.
No, no, it's only the money.
Only
I'm just
money.
Giving you 1,000 ringgits.
Okay.
We have
in
to share
cash.
1,000 ringgits.
You have to share 1,000 ringgits between you.
So how much are you going to give me that I'll be happy? And how much?
50-50?
You can't split 50-50.
Oh,
this is a real world negotiation. You very rarely get 50-50.
How are you going to do
it? I want 70.
Okay. Okay. What's your reaction? He says he wants 70%.
Okay, then we go 51-49.
To who? To who?
Who's 51?
Okay, like we put 51 for him and 49 for me.
55.
I want 55.
What do you think?
As long as for me, I mean, something is better than nothing.
Perfect, right? In that negotiation, who has the most power?
By things, I mean, in the terms of power.
In that negotiation, I'm giving you 1,000 ringgit,
mm-hmm.
and if you don't agree, you guys get nothing. Who has the most power in that negotiation?
He's got the most power, but
yeah.
I wonder.
Most money.
You have the most power.
Yeah.
Because you start with nothing.
Yeah.
And if you don't agree, nothing has changed for you. But you I've given 1,000 ringgits to.
Yeah.
And if you don't agree, you lose 1,000 that all that money. So you could give him like 950 ringgits.
You get 50, yeah.
And you're still better off. We
yeah.
forget that. And in the negotiation here, it's about how do we become the most flexible? How do we think big picture? How do we negotiate with government so that we're giving them something and they feel like they're constantly benefiting?
Oh, that's a new approach, yeah?
Yeah, you got to think, because always we go into negotiations wanting to win.
Yeah.
We want more.
Yeah.
But actually, if you go in and say, I've got nothing to lose here, right? I'm coming in with nothing. If I get something, that's better than nothing. And gradually, I keep winning, and we keep winning more. And I'm not going to talk about all the stuff in the background and who gets what behind the table or in a red envelope or whatever. I can't deal with that. But, you know, we know that goes on as well. So, but I think the power here is the ability to surprise government.
To surprise the government?
Yeah, to say we're not going with our hand out. We're going with our hands together and saying, look, here's what we're already doing. Here is the most we can do with the resources we have. And look at how much we're doing. But now can you work with us to create a bigger picture? You've got a basis for discussion. Because you can say, here's the roadmap. Here are all the things we're doing. Here are the results we're achieving. Okay, if you want to change the roadmap, how? What's missing from this that you want to add to it? To add your flavour, we know that's going to happen. So there's no point worrying about it. We know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Let's get on and do it. Because we can always spend a lot of time worrying about the things that we can't change and arguing about these things. And we have our association meetings and they're the same. It's like we're playing the same tape over and over again about our complaints and we haven't got visas and they're not doing this. But we can get past all that. By saying, okay, let's focus on what we want to create. Let's keep focusing on what we want to create and how we're going to do there and the experiments we're going to do. Not all the experiments will succeed, but we'll learn a lot from them. And this is a big education thing now because the whole industry needs to sort of understand what we're trying to do here and that everyone needs to understand that they can't get everything that they want. You have to give a little bit to get this bigger picture. But getting something is better than getting nothing. And the risk is that if we're all fighting all the time, trying to get our story heard, that we're never going to win. So that would be my approach, is to really go for trying to get the industry to at least accept that it's worth trying. You lose nothing by trying. And in your position as chair of Malaysian Tourism Association, you have immense power to bring these people together for a conversation. And then if someone says no, well, you say, well, what would you suggest as a better option? And not in an aggressive way, but in a negotiation. Okay, we've had this conversation, we think this might be a good idea, what do you think? And if they say no, we say, well, what is your way of getting us there, when we know, history tells us we can't fix it all in 1 year. We can't get all the solutions done. Maybe even 3 years we can't. We know this. So how do we create a long-term future where we gradually get everyone aligned to where we're going? And even in 5 years' time, if you're 50% there, that's still good. And so you have Airbnb here, don't
you?
So the hotels know that they can't block this, really. They're just trying to delay it for as long as they can. And again, you can't prevent people trying to maximise their revenues. But they also have to see that there's a bigger picture here. And accept that this is going to happen at some point, and that people are going to do it. And again, I think you can push and push and push on this one thing with government, and maybe you win, but it might take you 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Or you get them buying into this bigger picture where they're saying, okay, here's the mix, that in the future we want to have this growth in tourism, so 60% is going to be in 3-star hotels and above, 20% in 1- and 2-star hotels, 20% is in homestay.
Mm.
Then it becomes their challenge as well to say, well, how do we make that easy? How do we make it easy for people to become registered as a homestay provider?
Mm.
And then they're invested in making that happen rather than you pushing, pushing, pushing.
Mm.
You have to get them bought into this, because their job as tourism ministry is to help tourism develop, not just to say no. And so we need to use them to negotiate with all of the other people who are the hurdles for someone to become a homestay provider, because you're saying they have to go to different people to get different licenses. So this is for the tourism ministry to be your champion. I'm going to come for the Asian
conference
World Nanotechnology Conference and stay in an Airbnb. Most people are.
Yeah.
If you're a student, you might.
Yeah.
I would.
Sorry?
I would.
You would.
I'm a teaching kind of guy.
No. I might, because I like meeting the people. And
yeah,
but a lot of people won't.
Year, no.
Yeah. And I think that also gives you the possibility, something we haven't talked about yet. It gives you the possibility to start to attract events of a different kind.
Mm.
So, everyone wants the events industry to come. It's been very critical to the growth of economies like Sydney, like Singapore.
Yeah.
The events industry has been key because they've identified key events that they want to bring that could feed growth sectors.
Mm.
So, for example, Sydney's a really good example. They identified 12 sectors in the economic plan for Sydney, nanotechnology, biotech, whatever.
Mm.
And then they went to the associations in those sectors and started to bid for their events.
Yeah.
And they've done a crazily successful job.
Mm.
But then they bring those people, they come for the event, they spend money in KL or wherever.
Mm.
They spend money on the hotel rooms, they spend money in the local area. You incentivize them to stay a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But the other thing is they're from that industry. So the people in that industry here, if you're, let's say you're a drone company here and you bring a drone conference, then you're getting all these contacts with the drone industry. Your students here are learning from those people, and maybe you start to get investment and you generate business.
Mm.
And the value of that, Sydney have shown that the value of that in terms of the business generated is more than 5 times the value of the tourism revenues.
Mm.
So there's a really powerful economic argument there. And that's a mix of hotels and Airbnb stay. And that's where it's not just tourism, it's economic development who see the value of this.
Mm.
And then you're starting to work together to make these things happen. The other thing that we haven't really talked about is bringing in the councils, the different players, the airports, the airlines, bringing them into these conversations and saying, how do we work together to make this happen? How do we drive this forward? Because I think these are all parts of the mix, and there's very little you can fix short term. The only things you can do something about short term is the industry itself doing some short-term promotion via social media. There's nothing else you can really do short-term to have a big long-term impact. The big long-term impact comes from working together to create the roadmap and starting to clear some of the roadblocks. And you just have to accept there are going to be fights. There are going to be fights between the hotels and the homestay providers. You're not going to fix all those. So you just have to say, look, guys, not everyone is going to win every battle. This is coming. Do we fight and waste all that energy, or do we just get on and do it?
Yeah. Elaborate a bit about the sustainability that
you said
we did not mention.
Ignore it.
Actually, we are doing it, but probably it's not centered.
Yeah.
So that's where you start to look at, well, what are the standards being used across the world to look at the sustainability of resorts, properties, transport, food and beverage, yachting, whatever it is. You start to say, what are the best practice standards for different sizes of establishment, and getting them benchmarking against that and setting their own plans, and the industry setting up some standards for people to work to. The good thing is, in tourism now, there's lots of work being done, there's lots of standards, there's lots of examples of destinations that are really green and destinations that are getting there, and how you do that transition, because it's not an overnight shift. Again, it's something you do. And normally, in some places, people make that transition because they're committed here to sustainability and creating a green future for their children. It's very small in the big picture. Most people go there because they realize that maybe they can save some money by reducing waste. And more importantly, most people go there because they think it will help them either retain customers or win new business. That being sustainable will be there, and they see it. You're not going to get there straight away again. It's a gradual push. And then if government brings some regulation, that also pushes a bit more. But moving towards a more sustainable operating model becomes standard in every industry, I think. Everywhere around the world. And there are league tables. I don't know where Malaysia stands in terms of its ranking as a sustainable tourism destination. My guess is you're probably somewhere in the middle. You're definitely not in the top 25%. And that's a good example where the whole industry can't solve that problem around getting tourists from Iran or other countries with forex issues. So you have to say, what are you doing? And then is there anything the industry can do to support you to create those packages? But really, you're going to be the one who knows Iran, so you know that you can't get the money from individuals, you get it from government by sending government people to come on a course here. That's brilliant. But it's not something that you can do overall, but you can support in some way. But it requires Layla's expertise to do that. You can't, you can't create a solution for all of those things and to do with forex is nothing you can do about the exchange rates. But the other point you made, which is very important, is educational tourism and medical tourism, and certainly trying to grow those sectors, getting people to come for short courses, degree programs, medical medical treatments. Those are all things, again, that you, when you talk to government, you can have those as part of the roadmap that are planned, that they're doing things to help, because you as an industry don't want to certify the education institutes. You don't want to certify the healthcare providers. You need government to do that. But you need the tourism ministry to lead on those things. You can provide the hospitality part of that, but you need government to...
What do you think of Malaysia's as a tourist destination compared to Thailand?
I think Thailand has a longer reputation for tourism. It has a lot of well-understood propositions, from family tourism to spiritual yoga retreats. It has all of those things now well understood outside. So it has a longer history of that. And it doesn't really... people don't have the same security concerns. So KL is still, I think Malaysia is still seen, it depends on where you look. I think in a lot of parts of Asia now, it's seen as a very safe place to come.
Mm.
It's a natural place to visit. Maybe you've been to Thailand already, Malaysia's next, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the West, there's still the solo traveller, the independent, I think will be interested. The more family-oriented tourism, there's still going to be these concerns about security. So it's building up gradually that profile of the country. Maybe the government wants to spend more money on marketing to help that, but it's also working together as an industry to drive up your visibility, to drive up the professionalism. It's not something you can fix just with an advertising campaign. It's something you have to take that 5-10 year view as to how you're going to build up tourism here. Because Thailand has been a tourism destination for 50 years, right? It didn't start last year. So you're trying to compete with something that's been there a long time. And so you have to build up. And Malaysia can be that, but it requires a consistent long-term focus. You can't do it all overnight.
And a good roadmap.
I think the roadmap is the way to go to get people focusing in the right direction. Otherwise, it's lots of little pieces, and then you're hoping that somehow it all makes a good meal.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Rohit. Really
my pleasure.
We hope to be able to connect. Thank you.
Guys, what is your target for 2023? Would you like to penetrate international markets such as Indonesia, Middle East, European, or even American market? If so, don't miss any of USAID's live webinar and videos to learn on new market opportunities. Go to USAID.online now.
So there you go, guys. A great conversation with Rohit Talha. And I hope you can find a lot of takeaway points in this episode and how we can, you know, we as industry players can collaborate together and to move forward our inbound business. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe this podcast wherever platform you are listening in. And I'll see you in the next episode of Tourism in Malaysia podcast. Have a great day.